Let's begin our seventh week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by turning to Genesis chapter number 13. And we're going to pick up in verse number 8 with the story we dropped off in last time. It's all about Abram and his nephew Lot. They are encamped in the region around where Bethel and Ai are going to be located in the time of Moses and Joshua and the Israelites, which is a little bit north of where Jerusalem is located today and west of the Jordan Valley. And what's happening is Abram and Lot are becoming so wealthy in possessions. They've got so much cattle, herds, flocks, that they're contending with one another for the grazing lands of this region. And it's causing some tension between their employees. And Abram doesn't want that. So he speaks to his nephew and makes him a very wonderful offer. And it shows the kindness of Abram that he would, as the senior member of this partnership, offer Lot the opportunity to choose the best grazing areas. So Genesis 13:8, Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take to the left hand, then I'll go to the right. And if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." And so Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of He Who Is. That's the name that I'm using this time through for the divine name. Like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. So at this particular moment in history, the Jordan Valley looked different than it does right now. Because if you were to go to this same area, about 10 miles north of Jerusalem, and up in the hills west of the Jordan Valley, and look down there, it would be full of desolation. It would look like a desert. Now, there are little places where there's green, right where the Jordan River at. There's kind of a ribbon of green. And there's little places where they've planted date palms and other places, other plants such as that. But that's all at the hands of modern agriculture. The area is very dry. You would never describe it as looking like the Garden of Eden. You wouldn't describe it as looking lush like the Nile Delta. And yet that is exactly what is described here. And then Moses gives us perhaps the reason why we have a different perception of it than there was at that time. Here's the parenthetical comment. This was before He Who Is destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Now that story's coming up later, and it is, I think, the reason why the Dead Sea, which back in this time it's being called the Salt Sea, why the Dead Sea comes into existence, and why this Jordan Valley area, the Arabah, the desert region that's all around the Dead Sea, why it came into existence. I think it is part of the destruction zone of Sodom and Gomorrah. We know that the Dead Sea is like 12 to 1400 feet below sea level. And even as far up north as the Sea of Galilee, that sea and the Jordan Valley area around it is still several hundred feet below sea level. It appears to me, and it's only just my own personal theory, guys, that when Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, that whole region just bottomed out. And if you check out all along the Jordan Valley rift area, you can tell where the normal gradient going into a valley would have existed and how it's just sheared down from several hundred feet above sea level to just suddenly way down below sea level, 1,200 feet below sea level, 1,000 feet below sea level. So a massive drop-off all along both sides of the Jordan Valley. And then you can see the erosion zones for the places where water was running down into the original valley that now they pour over the edges and down into the gore, as it's called. And it's caused a lot of erosion zones. So none of that, I think, existed at this particular time when Lot was evaluating it. And so he sees it as prime grazing area. Wonderful place to take his herds and flocks to. So verse 11, Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east, and thus they separated from each other. And so Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now, Sodom, again, is going to come up in the later story. And there's five cities in particular that are mentioned in that story. One of them we seem to think we know where it is still located. It was a place that in the story of Lot becomes Zoar, because it's so small. It's not a significant city, and so that's why he asked God to spare it so he could run to it. Now, he didn't go to it. That's an interesting part of the story. He goes up and hides out in the hills in some caves, but the city was spared. And ancient history, going way back, very close to the beginning of the Christian era, identifies that place down to the south east corner of what remains of the Dead Sea. So I believe that north of there, which would take you up into the northern basin of the Dead Sea, that's probably where the other four cities were located, probably toward the eastern side of that basin, and that basin is effectively the destruction crater left after the overturning of the land at God's divine judgment. But we'll talk more about that in days to come. In this story, though, we know that Lot started up in the Jordan Valley just east of where he and Abram had been living, which would be by Bethel, about 10 miles north of the city of Jerusalem, and therefore if he came down into the Jordan Valley, that would be about 10 miles north of the northern end of the modern Dead Sea. So that's where he starts at, but he gradually moves south and ends up pitching his tent near where Sodom was located. Abram also decides to do some moving. We'll talk about that in a moment. He doesn't stay around Bethel Ai area either. Verse number 13. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against He Who Is. And that's setting the stage for the later story of how Lot is compromised in the city of Sodom and how he loses so much in the destruction of the city. Even his wife, and he barely gets out of there with his two virgin daughters because the people of Sodom are horrible. They are far advanced in the sinful degradation of society of the Canaanites. And again, once we get to the Sodom and Gomorrah story, we'll talk more about that. Let's get back to Abram's story, though. Verse 14. Then he who is said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, which would still be around Bethel, which is right on the ridge line, so to speak, of the spine of Canaan. And he's told to look northward, so that would be up toward where Shechem was located. And remember, he stopped off in that region first. And then southward, that would be in the direction he's going to go very quickly here, past where Jerusalem will soon be, and down past to Hebron. And then eastward, that would be into the Jordan Valley. And westward, that'd be over to the Mediterranean plain. And then God says this, verse 15, for all the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so very, very numerous, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. So he is invited to check out the property that God will eventually deed over to the children of Abraham through Isaac, through Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel. Now, he's already been to the north, up at Shechem, and he's been here at near the place where Bethel is eventually going to be. So he goes south at this point. So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And there he built an altar to He Who Is. Now we know exactly where Hebron is. It's south of Jerusalem, and it is where the tomb of Abram and Sarai and also Isaac and Rebecca, whom we have not yet met, and Jacob and Leah. The tomb of the patriarchs, which is still a holy site to this day, even though it is the Muslim community that seems to have control of that right now. Mamre is the name of the Amorite that Abram is going to enter into some sort of alliance with. So this is his home territory. The oaks or the tall trees of this man are used as a landmark of the exact site where Abram sets up his first encampment. And it's only the central encampment because his flocks and his herds are going to be far ranging around this area. So that they can not have the same problem again that he'd been having with Lot. We'll talk more about the three companions or friends of Abram later. We're ready now to begin the next story, which is chapter 14. And it officially begins a few years earlier, when Abram was still living in Ur of the Chaldees and in Haran. And this is the first part of that story. In the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Shinar is roughly equivalent with Babylon City, so up in Mesopotamia where Babylon is located. Arioch, king of Elasar, which is also apparently a place up in Mesopotamia. Chedorlaomer, king of Elam. Elam is pretty much western Iran today. So it is still Mesopotamia. It's just across the Tigris River from Mesopotamia. And Tidal, king of Goyim. And goyim in Hebrew means the nations. So we're not sure where this place is at. It's probably, again, somewhere in Mesopotamia. Now, this is what we know historically. The Akkadian Empire kind of controlled the area of Mesopotamia until about the time that Abram was born. His birth area was right on the fringe of the 200 or so year Akkadian Empire as it fell apart. Now, the next big power that rises up in Mesopotamia is what is referred to today as the third dynasty of Ur. Now, this Ur is not Ur of the Chaldees, which is up in northern Mesopotamia, but this is down in the southeast part of Mesopotamia. It's right down on the coastland of ancient Mesopotamia as the Tigris-Euphrates fed into the Arabian Gulf or the Persian Gulf area. And so Ur number 3 dynasty came into existence right around 2100 BC. Now that's roughly the time that we're looking at right now. The time when Abram moved to the Promised Land and started interacting with the people there. So according to the histories, this period between the collapse of Akkadia and the rise of Ur III, that's a bit of a dark age for the Mesopotamian region. And so you've got city-states that are competing with one another for resources. But in this instance, we seem to have several of them start cooperating, making an alliance. So we've got Amraphel, Arioch, Chedorlaomer, and Tidal of Mesopotamia that seem to be allying with one another with an intention of securing resources for themselves. And so where do they go? They do not head south and east into the area where Ur is starting to rise to power. Instead, they make their way over to Canaan. Verse 2, it says, these kings made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adma, Shemabur, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. So Bela is going to become Zoar in the story of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah later. Verse number 3, all these joined forces in the valley of Sidim, that is the Salt Sea. So that again tells us that the cities of the plain, the five cities that we're talking about here, are located right where the north basin, possibly down into the southern basin area, of the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea existed after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's my thesis, and I think there's good evidence that we see in this story about that. So, Sidim here is a Hebrew word that means cultivated fields. And it matches what we already know about this area. The reason Lot chose it is because it is very lush. It is very prosperous. So this is a major breadbasket area at this time in history, before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, when the Dead Sea came into existence and the Arabah came into existence, according to my belief. So the kings of Mesopotamia see this as a perfect place to bring under their control so that they can get all of this resource coming out of there. Now, it wasn't just simply grain and fruit and vegetables and probably livestock that they were trying to get control of. They were also getting control of the bitumen mining operation. Bitumen is a petroleum-based substance that was leaking out of the ground freely all around here. We know that the Middle East, in all the other places around Israel, have lots and lots of petroleum resources that they are now tapping and which have brought them great wealth. But the strange thing is, Israel didn't have anything like that underneath them. And I think it's probably because of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah ignited and burnt off all of the petroleum reserves that were in the area underneath the what now has become the Jordan Valley, and therefore no more oil. But in the time of Abram, the time of Lot, the time of these kings and Sodom and Gomorrah and the other cities of the plain, the bitumen just bubbled up from the ground, and they collected it because it was used, waterproofing, but it was also used for other things as well. So it was fairly decent moneymaker. So these kings have now secured themselves a major resource area that will help them become more wealthy and more powerful. And so verse number 4 tells us that for 12 years they had served Chedorlaomer, but in the 13th year they rebelled. So after 12 years of paying tribute, paying grain and animals and bitumen into the pockets of these four kings from Mesopotamia, the cities of the plain had enough. And they said, no more, we're not paying. And in the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him came, and then they started doing all sorts of military operations on their way to take over Sodom, Gomorrah, and the other cities of the plain. And the date for this, the year that this happens, is 2091 BC. According to the chronology that I'm working with. And you can check out my chronology by getting a copy of my chronological companion right there on the website, intotheword2020.com. Just look for it there. So in this particular year, an invasion force sweeps down along what is called the Ancient King's Highway. And from where these guys are located, it would have followed north and west along the Euphrates River, and then it would have turned south and cut across the northern Arabian desert to roughly where Damascus will be located. And then it follows it south right through the area to the east of the Jordan Valley, and all the way down to the Gulf of Aqaba. And then it turned westward there and went across the Sinai Peninsula to the Delta of Egypt. So that's the Ancient King's Highway. So this invasion force is following that highway, and they are taking under their control, probably a second time, all these various groups that might hinder them controlling Canaan. So they defeated the Rephaim in Ashtaroth Karnim. Now this is where it gets very intriguing to me, and I know it will be for a lot of you. We're running out of time for today's episode, so we might have to come back to this tomorrow. But Rephaim is Hebrew for either healers or fixers. That's one possible meaning. Or if you look at the letters in it and realize that there might be similar sounding letters that might be written down in earlier texts, it could be the ones who sank down. Now that should be intriguing because that comes close to being the Nephilim, the fallen ones that we've met once before. Now, why am I bringing that up? Because the Greek Old Testament at this point says that these were the gigantes, the word from which we get giant, which brings up the whole Genesis 6 thing over again. Because we were told then that they were living in the world before the flood and after the flood. So Moses was already signaling, I'm going to tell you a story later about these gigantes or these Rephaim, these giants. Now these giants, the Rephaim, they're living in Ashtaroth Karnaim, which is located somewhere just east of the Sea of Galilee. And so these are the first giants they run into, and they bring them under control. But they're not the only giants, because the next group that's listed is also a giant race. And that would be the Zumim that come up next in Ham. Now, Ham here might actually be in them in the Hebrew. So they might, the language in Hebrew might be signaling you've got Rephaim in Ashtaroth Karnaim, and you've also got the Zumim associated with them in that same place. Because the Zumim, their word in Hebrew means the conspicuous ones. And in another place, they are also associated with giants. So I hope that kind of whets your appetite for coming back tomorrow for the next episode. And we will pick up this story with this killing of the giants by the invading force.